everyone. Welcome to Lost Rhetoric, a dim space for light hearts where we discuss all manner of odd. My name is Jason Dingus. Thank you for being here with me. Thanks to all return listeners and to all new listeners. Well, you all might be new listeners at this point. I might have lost every single listener I had because yesterday was the 6th month anniversary of the last episode I did. So people might have just forgot about me. I have no idea if people even care anymore, but I care. I always intend to do this show. It wasn't a planned hiatus, but it happens. I got a new job with a different schedule, long days. I come home with no energy or time, for that matter, to even do any research or let alone book a guest. Forget that. It's just, I don't have as much free time as I used to. I'm trying. I'm going to keep trying to do a couple episodes a month. That's always my goal. Try to do 2 a month and we'll see how it goes. This is my first attempt. Somehow the stars aligned. I got enough spare time on this Sunday and a couple nights before to do some research. But I got some time today to record with the old man. Because if you know how I roll, every time I take a break, I always have to come back in my comfort zone where it all started. A conversation with the old man always brings it back and levels my head. Tonight, we are going to be talking about Clifford Stone and alien crash retrieval, or his history of it. It's a fun discussion. I'm not gonna lie. It's not the most thorough that I've ever done. I kind of botched the story a little bit. I left out like kind of a key detail, but it led to some good comedic moments. I think we had some fun talking about some stuff. But you know. You'll see. We'll get into it. The old man calls Vietnamese people little people. I kind of call them racist. We get into that for a little bit. That's fun. We just have a good time. There's no exhumed excerpt at the end of this episode, but my old man does go into telling some stories of some old military lore involving aliens. So he kind of pulls off some exhumed excerpts off the cuff. If you want to say officially those are the exhumed excerpts for the night, you can. I certainly wouldn't blame you. But yeah, that's my explanation for how it's all been not happening. Hopefully you would enjoy this conversation. Now let's get into what we always get into. What have I been listening to? Well, in 6 months, I'm not even going to go into it. I will say that I have a Lost Rhetoric Spotify account where it's public. I don't use Spotify to look up profiles, and I never look at other people's playlists or anything. But I make playlists, and I guess other people can see them. But I have one on there called Songs That Kill, that I'm constantly adding songs to, and all it is songs throughout my life that I just apparently can't get enough of. It's just like a song full, or a playlist of, I guess, my earworms and my favorites of all time. Just great songs, you know, songs that kill. So if you want to know what I'm listening to constantly, it's pretty much that playlist on shuffle. But there is some stuff that has come up recently. The War and Treaty, who I've mentioned before, have a new album called Lover's Game on UMG Recordings, and they're just fucking phenomenal. Country gospel, I think, is kind of how they explain or describe their music. But man, on each of their albums, they write songs, multiple songs that I'm sure every musician listens to is like, fuck, I wish I would have written that song. Like songs that are so good that you just can't fucking believe anyone even wrote them. It's just like, they have multiple songs on every one of their albums that are just beyond great. So I highly recommend Lover's Game if you're into country gospel, as they say. What else? I finally came around to Wet Leg. I think they won a Grammy for this album, self-titled on Domino Records or Recordings or whatever. Yeah, I finally came around to it. They're good, clever, vulgar, catchy. Yeah, pop. I don't know. I'm not going to say pop punk. They're just catchy pop rock. They're rock and roll. They're fucking rock. They're a rock band. Very good. Sold. From Portland, Oregon. That's Sold with two S's. Have a new EP called Passionate Horse. They're your musicians' favorite musicians from way back when in Portland. Noise extraordinaires, extraordinaries, noise rock. Is that what the kids call it? Listen to Sold if you're into noisy rock and punk and maybe some like metalish, whatever, loud noises, you know, banging and clashing and all that shit, and good rhythms and good musicianship. If you're into all of that stuff mashed together, boy, you're gonna like Sold. Super Heaven, way into this band. They have an album from 2015 called Ours Is Chrome on Side One Dummy, and they do 90s music, proud 90s, like alternative, I guess. Just fucking insanely great, nostalgic sounding music for me, made by people much younger than me. Young people making nostalgic music for my generation. I love it. I love it. I would have hated it if I were their age, I'm sure. I hated the music when I was young and the sound that they make. I hated it when I was a kid. Fucking love it now, I'll tell you that much. And I love Super Heaven if you're into 90s alternative rock. These are the things that I've been buying. I bought on vinyl. We'll do a vinyl edition of what I've been listening to. Speaking of 90s sounds, Soul Blind, bunch of young kids making some really heavy, on the heavier side of 90s music. Feel It All Around on Other People Records. Great, great record. I've been listening to this one a lot. I think they've been on tour with Super Heaven recently, too. Show Me the Body has a new record, Trouble the Water, on Loma Vista. And I talk about Show Me the Body all the time. They're one of my, they just played Portland a couple nights ago. Fucking phenomenal band. If you don't listen to them, you should. 84 Tigers, Time in the Lighthouse on Spartan Records. If you know Small Brown Bike, it's the Reed brothers from Small Brown Bike. And a drummer who I forget, but I love he always introduces himself as the guy not from Small Brown Bike. He knows the score. But if you like Small Brown Bike, you're going to love 84 Tigers. They really bring it back. Soul Glow, who I've mentioned many, many times. I think I already mentioned Diaspora Problems. Diaspora? Yeah, I did, because I don't know how to say that word. Diaspora Problems on Epitaph. Fucking record of the year right there. I got Phoebe Bridgers' Stranger in the Alps on vinyl. That's a great record. Onyx, the 30-year anniversary of Back the Fuck Up, one of my favorite records. It's the 30-year anniversary this year, and I'm actually going to see them on that tour. It's going to be the first show I've gone to in like over 3 years. But I bought Back the Fuck Up on vinyl. Still haven't gotten it in the mail, but I ordered it. Discordance Axis, Inalienable Dreamless repress. Got that classic record right there. Snack Truck, my friend Matt Krofcheck sent me an old Snack Truck. It's called the Terrier Demo. It's a 7-inch from 2003. And I didn't even have a copy of it. I think I booked them in Portland on that tour in 2003, and I never got the 7-inch. Great band. He has a solo project called Elliptical Path, and he sent me the cassette called Resonant Topography out on Pyramid Blood. It's just really cool. It's ambient, really cool percussion, but it sounds like field, almost nature recordings in the background with really cool percussion and kind of like synth work. I don't really know. I hope I'm doing it justice, this explanation, Matt. But it's really good. It's good mood music. And I'm trying to rally Matt into being a guest on this show. One of my favorite musicians, one of my favorite guitar players of all time, Matt Krofcheck. So check out Elliptical Path and check out Snack Truck if you don't listen to Snack Truck. And that is what I've been listening to for the most part. But yeah, check out that Songs That Kill playlist. Look up Lost Rhetoric on Spotify. I'm sure that's seriously a ongoing playlist. I'm going to keep adding songs that I just can't get enough of. And some of them are corny as fuck, but it's just, I like them, man. So get off my back about it. All right, I already told you, talking to the old man, fucked up the story, said some funny stuff, had a good time. I really felt a little out of it during this one. Like, I got to get my legs back, you know? Like, I haven't done it in 6 months. I felt a little off. But it was fun nonetheless. It's nice to be back in this chair, in this capacity. Because, you know, I have another podcast called Dr. Donut and the Dingus, which... We're pretty sporadic with our recording schedule too, but we at least try to do a couple a month, and that one requires zero research. I just sit down for an hour and shoot the shit with my friend Dr. Donut, and we have a really fucking good time. So look up Dr. Donut and the Dingus for. We're not comedians, we're not psychiatrists or psychologists or professional advice givers, but we have a good time. We get really personal and we tell stories and we try to help people in our own little way and try to be funny. So if you're into that, kill an hour of your day with us and try to laugh. As for this show, go to lostrhetoric.com. Please check out the merch, buy the merch. Check out every single episode I've ever done. I'm going to keep, like I said, trying to pump them out at a snail's pace. And yeah, find me on Instagram. It's the only social media I use, just Lost Rhetoric Podcast. Email me, lostrhetoricpodcast@gmail.com. Tell me how you're doing. Tell me how I'm doing. I'd love to hear from you. And that being said, man, let's get into this conversation with the old man about Clifford Stone. I'm going hoarse already and with my throat. I got to get my callus back. But it does feel good to be here with you folks. And I hope you enjoy this as much as I did. Here's me and the old man.
Please leave a message at the tone.
Mm-hmm. Hey, it's Jason. It's time to do the. There you.
Hey, hello.
There you are. Still,
what's up?
Still screening the calls.
Huh?
I said still screening the calls.
Uh huh. Well, I was leaning a bit. I was watching Clinton.
Clinton, like old Clinton.
Clint Eastwood.
Oh, you call him Clinton?
Clint Eastwood marathon.
Oh. I thought you were watching. I thought you were watching old Bill Clinton speeches or something.
Oh no! the Clint Eastwood marathon movie, Spaghetti Westerns, on Sundance TV today.
I see.
I've been watching him all day.
Well, that sounds like nothing's changed.
Well, I can't miss that. That him and the Duke.
Mm-hmm.
Him and the Duke.
Well.
Him doing.
You are you gonna be able to distract yourself from Westerns and talk about some weird Vietnam alien crash retrieval shit?
Oh yeah, you wanted to do that today, didn't you? I forgot about that. I forgot, yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
Well, this is it. We're recording.
Hey. Oh, okay. Well, that's just wonderful. Okay, yeah, what? All right, so what you got?
Well, I got.
I've heard some Vietnam stories of, soldiers and the sailors having alien encounters during the Vietnam War.
Well, this is a specific person in a specific story. A guy named Clifford Stone. I came across an article from this UFO magazine and phenomena report. I actually have an actual copy of this from October 1998, and he actually wrote an article for it, and I read it and I was like, oh, that's a pretty interesting story. The old man would probably like that. And then I started looking into him a little bit more, and he was like, you know, a player in ufology. He was at the disclosure project, you know, the National Press Club thing in D.C. in 2001. And he's got some beliefs, but he's apparently got some experiences as well. So I was going to tell you...
What's his?
Well, I'll give you a little background of him, and then I'll read the story, or tell you the story, the one specific incident, and then we'll get more into other shit.
Was he a soldier?
Yeah, yeah. All right, I'll let you know. Okay, so this is actually from his obituary, because he passed away in 2021. This is what it says.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah. Clifford Earl Stone.
I am for that.
He served honorably in the United States Army for over 20 years as an administrative/legal specialist. He served during the Vietnam War and met his beautiful and supportive wife, H-A-N-H. He was assigned at Fort Bliss, Fort Campbell, Hanau, Keesler Air Force Base, and New Mexico Military Institute. During that time, he received M16 Expert Badge, Overseas Service Ribbon with Bars, Meritorious Unit Citation, Republic of Vietnam Gallantry Cross Unit Citation with Palm, Non-Commissioned Officers Professional Development Ribbon, National Defense Service Medal, Army Good Conduct Medal, Army Commendation Medal, Bronze Star Medal, and the Meritorious Service Medal. Which one of those is most impressive to you?
I would say the Bronze Star.
How you get one of those?
That's a combat medal.
Yeah, he was.
That's a Bravery in Combat Medal.
He was.
Would you say it was the Bronze Star?
He did. Yeah, he got a Bronze Star.
Yeah, well, that's pretty high up there for, you know, for gallantry and bravery. He was in some kind of scuffle, I would say.
Yeah, his military history seems kind of weird. It seems like he had a lot of non-combat, like he wasn't fighting all the time. It sounds like maybe he fought early, and I don't really know. He wanted to fight. We'll get into that. He really, really wanted to fight. But after retirement, Clifford worked for TMC, the Roswell Mall, and Job Corps. At Job Corps, he enjoyed the interaction with the youth and the opportunity to assist in molding the students. He made it a point to treat the students attending as if they were his own children. Clifford's passion was his interest in UFOs. He was a huge part of the UFO community. He had two books published and spoke at many venues from around the world. He was described as a quote-unquote treasure in UFO circles.
Really?
So that's Clifford.
What's his full name again?
Clifford Earl Stone. Everyone needs just Clifford Stone. So he wasn't well known until the National Press Club meeting that Stephen Greer organized in D.C. in 2001, the Disclosure Project, where, you know, like 20 plus military personnel basically came out with their stories of experiences. And Clifford Stone was one of them. And like at that meeting, the big bombshell was that he was part of like crash retrieval units, and they had identified 57 species of extraterrestrials, basically. And I think all of them, or most of them.
Oh, really?
All or most of them were humanoid. So that was his big contribution to that whole day. And he, ever since then, was like, you know, giving speeches and going around and telling his stories. And so apparently he served for 22 years, and over those 22 years, he claims to have been involved with or have knowledge of at least 12 alien crashes.
Oh, God.
So he was
really?
So he was a part of some sort of like alien crash retrieval unit, and I guess he had some like nuclear retrieval background, and that's why he was a part of these missions. I guess they'd go out in like A and B teams, and they didn't, I guess at first, it seems like they didn't really know, like they didn't really brief them as to like exactly what they were going, they just kind of walked in and like, oh fuck, those are aliens. That's what it sounds like. It's like, and then they got debriefed when it was all done. But it's like, they're like, oh, you're going to go visit a crash site, but they didn't say, they might have known that it was of unknown origin. But the way it sounds is it's like, a lot of these folks that were on these units, especially the people that were just there as like, I don't know, protection, like part of the unit, the soldiers on the ground, like they didn't seem to really know what they were getting into. And then all of a sudden they're fucking seeing a bunch of dead aliens and shit. It's pretty interesting. But so in Vietnam, I guess he spent four years over there as like a UFO specialist. And his story gets deep. Like, I'm just going to kind of read you tell you this one story, and then we'll get more into his history, his background, because it's a lifelong history, apparently, communication with aliens or a specific alien. And I guess he's got some sort of, like, telepathy, because the aliens, he can hear them talking to him, you know? Even though no one else can hear them talk. But I guess it's known as an interfacer. He's an interfacer.
I've heard of such, yeah.
So this story. It's the story's called "Encounter in Vietnam" by Clifford Stone, and this is just a little sidebar. You know how they call it the NAM.
Yeah.
It's either the NAM or NOM, right? Like, no one. No one ever calls it the NOM, or you know.
It's usually the NAM, yeah.
The NAM, like.
Yeah.
Anyway, I always think that's funny because people. It's like tomato, tomato. You know, it's like Vietnam or Vietnam. But you never say. No one ever says the NAM.
A lot of the veterans, they call it the NAM. They call it the NAM.
The NAM, or NAM, or just NAM.
Yeah.
But never the NAM, or NAM. No one ever says, over in NAM, it's the NAM, mm-hmm. or NAM. Anyway, I like that. Weird, whatever. But I think he calls it the NAM.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard of such, too.
So... he got over there in January of 1970, and he was assigned to First Logistics Command, which he called a plush assignment. And I guess it was because he had an altercation with another soldier where the other guy ended up in the hospital. So he was reassigned to a special base camp. Special base camp with the 277 South and South Battalion Headquarters Company as a clerk typist. So, I guess he got in some trouble and put behind a desk is what it sounds like. He was young and full of vigor and, you know, all of that hate and American pride and wanted some...
Full of cum and vinegar.
Yeah, exactly. And he just wanted some action. And he had a desk job basically from like 8 to 4. And he claims... So this is what he claims he did. And this is where this whole fucking thing starts for him. Not necessarily, but this is where this one incident starts for him. He says he would sneak out at night and go into what he called the kill zone, which was a 300-meter area cleared in front of the perimeter of base camp. And then he said he would end up in shooting altercations. by himself out there.
Good chance of that.
Do you believe that? Do you believe a soldier could do that?
Yeah.
You think he could get away, do that and get away with that and, like, not get killed? Because,
yeah.
Because weren't there, like these kill zones or these, because, you know, there's dead zones and then there's certain zones where it's like shoot anything that fucking moves. And then there's zones that you better not shoot without permission. You know what I mean? I forget what these zones. I got a note somewhere. I forget what these zones are called. But apparently he was in a fucking shoot first and shoot anything that. Oh, a free fire zone basically, is what he was walking into. It was a free fire zone. By himself. With a gun, walking into a free fire zone where it's shoot anything that moves. So he could have just as well been shot by his own people who didn't, because he was where he was not supposed to be. And anyway.
Well, that could have happened, yes.
Because there's a whole rebuttal by this former soldier that this guy, this soldier named Don Ecker, like right after this article in the same magazine, there's a one-page rebuttal by Don Ecker that claims that this assertion that Clifford Stone snuck out into a free fire zone by himself is, like, absolutely ridiculous. That no one would ever fucking do that. And that is just unheard of, just bonkers, and he doesn't believe a word this guy says.
It's not a common practice, no.
But you think people have done it?
Oh, hell yeah.
You think? They're going fucking commando.
I've talked to Vietnam vets that they told me some stories that were similar to that.
Really? They're going yeah. rogue and, like, fucking fighting their own fight in the middle of the night.
Yeah, and most of the time it was people that were just fed up. It was soldiers that was just fed up with not being able to get their hands on those fucking little bastards.
they just
wanted to go out there and find some of them and just, you know, chop them up into little pieces.
They had them really riled up, man. They really hated Vietnamese people.
And yeah.
They drank the Kool-Aid.
If you've heard some of the stories of what they did to our people and to the South Vietnamese, you would understand.
Well, I'd imagine, because I've read some books from soldiers and, of course, seen movies. Being over there and being, like, their tactics. It's scary as fuck and brutal, and then you're fighting for your life, and then you hate anyone trying to kill you. So,
well, of course,
you get fucking,
and like I say, the main thing was they couldn't get their hands on the little bastards most of the time because they were hit and run. They were mostly guerrilla tactics, you know. They would hit us, and then they would fucking leave.
Well, that's how they.
You couldn't get your fucking hands on them.
Well, that would. Oh,
we'd kill some of them. Yeah, of
that'd
course.
Be frustrating, but, too.
You know, you just couldn't stop them from doing that shit.
They were just furtive.
A lot of people off.
They were furtive soldiers. They knew the terrain and they knew how to fight in secret. And they were a frustrating enemy. So I guess I could see going rogue and trying to take matters into your own hands just because you're getting frustrated that you don't get, like, those traditional battle victories.
Well, it was not only that, that, you know, some of those guys over there would go rogue. We had special units, especially Green Berets.
Mm-hmm.
Rambo.
Yeah.
You know, what was his main purpose? To kill enemy personnel. The American military has always had units like that. They go out there, especially at night, and, you know, just cut throats. They'll kill as many fucking, enemy personnel as they can get their hands on.
Man, it just sounds,
you know,
it just sounds, very, very risky and very, like a not very informed decision. It's boneheaded. It's like, going out into the jungle by yourself at night when your own people don't even know you're out there, and their order is to shoot anything that moves. Pretty ballsy, I guess. And that's why this Don Ecker guy's like, there's no fucking way he did this. This story is bullshit from the jump. Because he doesn't think anyone would do that. Because it's so dumb to do.
I don't know. I would say that there was probably more of that happened than what you might think.
Well, your whole argument of getting...
Especially during Vietnam.
Getting their hands on those...
Small units.
Those quote-unquote little bastards, as you call them, which sounds very... sounds very racist, by the way, Dad.
Oh, whatever.
Hold on. What the... All right, you're there. Okay. I was getting another...
I don't have a racist bone in my body, but I didn't like the VC and the NBA.
Well, these old vets, I'm sure, have much, much worse things to say.
I'm sure they do. I've heard some of it.
Well, people who are there, that's what I'm saying. It's like, but anyway, they're a very frustrating, smart enemy that I guess if you wanted to take matters into your own hands, you sneak out when you've got a desk job and you try to fucking kill people. Because you're just, you're got a bloodlust. Clifford Stone had a bloodlust, and he's already obviously got a hot temper. That's why he's behind a fucking desk, you know? Like, the ferity of this guy is, like, off the charts. It's just, yeah. He's just, I don't even know.
Okay, so what does he do? So he lives through all this stuff, right? And so what's the... What else does it, what does he do here? What else?
Let me say that word again. Ferity. It's not working.
Ferry.
I'm trying to do my new word of the night, and it's my first show back in 6 months, and my sound effect isn't working, and it's bumming me out. So anyway, if you know the show, you know there's supposed to be a car horn honk right there, because I used a new word, and the new word is ferity. Anyway, let's move on. Now I'm bummed. I still don't even know why it's not working. So yeah, he goes out, and the story gets fucking silly pretty fast. And just bear with me, because I'll explain it more later. So, he's out there. He said he snuck out with a M16 and 2 rounds of ammo. 2. Which also, that doesn't make any fucking sense.
Had 2 what?
2 rounds. He had an M16 and 2 rounds, is what he said.
2 rounds?
2 rounds.
Not 2 clips?
The word rounds is in the article.
Well, that's just 2 bullets.
I know. That doesn't make any sense.
Maybe
he was just popping in, you know? He's just going to pop a couple off and then, you know, go back. Okay, so he's out there with his 2 rounds, and he crossed the road, and a voice in the dark said, "You're late, what kept you?" Right? And it was a man that he had met before and recognized, and every time he was in one of these situations that he's about to get into, this guy's always there. And he only knew him as the Colonel. He always called him the Colonel. And he honestly didn't even know his rank or if he was even military ever. He's kind of like his handler in these sorts of situations, these UFO situations. And he said that they walked to 3 helicopters, which he thought were Jolly Greens. He doesn't know, but they weren't geared up for war. He said they were geared up for electronic surveillance once he got inside, which he thought was interesting. And he said that they needed him to help him figure out some shit about these possible uncovered VC tunnels or a tunnel complex like halfway up the Black Virgin Mountains. So they get in these huge helicopters, these Chinooks, he thinks, and they fly off into the jungle with no incident. And they land in a dead zone. And he said there were U.S. and South Vietnamese friendlies there patrolling or just, you know, whatever there. And he said the tunnels that they were going to inspect were 150 meters up the hill. So they get up there, and he says there's one entrance to this tunnel, which is odd. Because usually there's a series of tunnels where you're in it, there's always an escape route, you know. So to have one entrance is peculiar, but it was a massive entrance. He said it was big enough to drive a truck through. And the walls inside, I think there was debris covering the entrance too, like it was hidden, you know. But he said once he got inside, the walls were very, very smooth and shiny black. Like, they didn't look chipped away at by hand or by any sort of, like, tool. They were just, I don't know if they were glassy, but just very smooth and shiny black. And once they got in, you know, like, a whole unit went in, like, 30 of them, I guess, was going in. He said flashlights, radio, and everything electronic stopped working properly. Not completely, but they started kind of, you know, shorting out and shit about 100 meters in. And he thought it was odd that they could see in the tunnel, though. Like, they could see in the dark, kind of. I don't know if it was because of the shiny, the reflections or whatever, but he said they could see in this dark tunnel enough to, like, they didn't need their flashlights. So when the shit started shorting out and all that stuff, a few soldiers stayed back, and I think they were, like, hardwired phones and shit, like, if they needed to communicate, it was like a literal game of telephone. Like, somebody would say something, tell the other guy, and he'd relay it out of the tunnel, kind of thing. But they kept moving into the tunnel, and it kept getting brighter. And then they came up to a big room, he said. He said it was like walking into a light bulb. He said it was so bright that you could only make out silhouettes of people 10 feet away from you. Like, it was just blowing out your vision. And then they saw a green glow coming from an area. They saw a green glow, and the glow was about 15 to 18 inches by maybe 3 feet in dimension. So he and the colonel walk over to it, and there was a, like, holographic-like images, he said, of dials and gauges and what appeared to be control buttons. But he said it was just a flat surface and glowing green. Like, kind of like, you know, I'd imagine a touch fucking screen phone is now. Like, there's no actual buttons, it's just touch screen. In fucking, you know, in 1970 or whatever the fuck year this was. This is also kind of funny. He said the colonel suggested that he touch it, and he said that kind of pissed him off. Like, that's kind of a comedic moment where the colonel's like, "Hey man, you should touch it. you touch it, man." Which he said kind of got him pissed off. He was like, "Fuck you." they're in this crazy.
So they're out there flying around and over the jungle and that shit, and they run across this fucking big hole in the ground, and it's a tunnel.
It's a tunnel, yeah. But they knew about the tunnel, and this is where it gets weird. And his story, I'll give you his backstory a little bit. It'll make a little more sense at the end. But yeah, the colonel is essentially waiting for him in the jungle so he could take him to this tunnel. Like, he kind of knew he'd be there or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they knew about this tunnel, but they wanted to take Clifford.
Sounds like a setup to me.
Well, this is his job. This is what he does, apparently. Whether he knows it or not. the colonel suggested he touched it. He didn't touch it, but he ran his hand over it. And he said without touching it, the lights in the whole room dimmed down enough to where they could make out the shape of the room. And they were in a perfect huge cube, right? And that the light was emanating from the wall, from inside. And he said on one side of the room was a cigar-shaped craft that was shiny black, with no visible doors, but it had windows. And from inside, he said there was, like, only thing way you could describe it was a arc welder's blue light coming from the inside that he could see through the windows. And he said that he thought they were in some sort of biological laboratory. and that it had a perfect temperature, like it was temperature controlled. Like he said it felt really nice in there, and it was a hot Vietnamese jungle night outside. And like in the tunnel, it wasn't too cold. It was just like it was a nice temp. Like they, you know, which is odd. And then he says that he swears he saw human organs and skeleton structures and cadavers. And he thought they were U.S. servicemen and Vietnamese soldiers. And then some of the bodies were, he couldn't recognize, like they were unearthly creatures. And he said he saw they were like some typical and not so typical looking grays with large heads and spindly bodies that he couldn't catalog. And he saw some like humanoid type beings there on these tables, like all dead, I guess, you know. And like they're in a fucking lab. And he said that there was these test tubes and glass, you know, vessels and shit. Like, I guess you would find in a laboratory. And he dropped one of the glass test tubes and it didn't break. And he said that the colonel later told him that if he would have shot that test tube with a fucking gun, it still wouldn't have broke. Like, it was this crazy fucking technology that they had and we didn't. But he said it could withstand an impact, as much impact as a 6 to 8 inch armor plating. Is what he says. Like this thin fucking glass test tube. So at this point, I'm just going to read this couple little paragraphs about what he noticed about the room. He said,
"This story is beginning to sound familiar to me."
Okay. All right. Well, maybe you're going to have some repressed memories come up of your military service.
No, I think I've heard this before. This story about what you're describing, what this guy said he went through or saw.
Okay.
Or did.
Well, if you recognize that, this is the craziest part. This is pretty cool. Well, it's not the craziest part, but it's a really cool part. He says, and I'm just going to read it because he explains it better than I could. We noticed that over by where the ship was, the cigar-shaped ship, the walls became crystal clear. We could see the night sky. We couldn't see any trees or grass or earth. We could just see out on the night skies. Then the troops that were on the outside doing patrol, we could see them walk right over like they were walking right on air. They couldn't see in. We sent a runner back to call out if the troops were actually there in that location. As a matter of fact, we had them do some things, some motions to us, so we could tell that these were the troops. So they're sending guys out there to, like, wave at this wall that they can't see to prove that they are actually seen out of the fucking room, you know? Let's see. It appeared as though they were just walking on thin air. We asked if they could see anything peculiar about the ground. To them, it was just earth. There were trees there, but we didn't see the trees. There was vegetation there, but we didn't see the vegetation. For all intents and purposes, they were walking on air. It got to the point where we were laughing about this, but it was a nervous laughter because he knew we were confronting something that we knew couldn't possibly be of Charlie, of communist origin, even though we were being told by the colonel and several other people there who were in charge that this was the case. We went ahead and further played. Oh yeah, okay. So that's that. And then they hold on. Let me come back to that, because he says that I watched this little interview that he did years later, and he said that the soldiers were digging with shovels out there in the dirt, you know, that they couldn't see from within the room. He said from inside it looked like they were digging into thin air, but when they threw the shovels back, they could see the dirt fly behind them. So that's interesting. That's fucking weird. So just imagine that, like, outside it just looks like the normal world.
Yeah.
But there's a fucking UFO laboratory right under your feet, right in front of your face that you can't see, but it's there. And when you're inside it, you can see outside, but they can't fuck with your structure. They, like, you're just a mirage or something. Like, you're just a ghost. You're there, but they can't see you. Fucking weird. So, they kept messing with the control panel, and they were trying to disconnect it. It seems like they were maybe trying to take it or something to study it. I don't know. And he said he tried to lift it up, and a buzzing sound went off. And then all of a sudden, they couldn't see outside anymore. Like, shit shut down. And he said, he said red lights, like lasers the size of pencil lead, started to shine out, and he got hit in the eye with the laser. And he says this was very painful. And he turned around.
I would imagine.
Yeah, taking a laser, an alien laser in the eyeball. And he said he turned around and it felt like his back was on fire. I assume from maybe getting hit with the laser. I don't really know. But he just said he remembers screaming out and hearing other screams. But then he said that all he could say is, I would have to say that I passed out. He thinks he just passed out after that moment, right? So he can't remember anything. And he, next thing he knows, he's outside of the cave. And him or the colonel have no idea how he got there. But he's outside of the cave now. And soldiers carried him back to the helicopter, and he was sent to the hospital where they treated his eye. But he said his back and his arms were spasming. And he was fine, right? His eyes all fucked up. So the colonel showed up the next day, I guess, and then took him to meet another doctor and started asking if he had any conversations with aliens that he remembers. He's like, I don't remember anything like that. He's like, I just felt like I was on fire or hit with napalm or something. That's how he described the pain. So the colonel told him that the doctor was going to give him a shot to help him recollect what he was forgetting. And then he tells him, he's like, all right, man, you didn't pass out, actually. Everyone else was out, but you were down for about 45 minutes and alone in the room away from everyone else. So he's got 45 minutes alone in that room that he doesn't remember. And he tells him, you know, he's like, don't fucking tell anyone about this shit ever. And you know more about this than you even know that you know. And we're going to get it out of you. So the doctor gives him a shot. Like, and what kind of fucking shot do you think he's getting to help him remember shit? What the fuck? What shot is this?
Something like sodium pentothal. I don't know.
Is that the true serum?
Yeah.
How is that supposed to help you recollect?
Something similar to that, or you know.
Well, this is where
would make you tell the truth.
This is the whole sci-fi bit where it's just like he gave me a shot and I started remembering. I'm like, okay, where's that? What the fucking shot is that? Where's that shot?
Some kind of alien concoction, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you just gotta you know, brush over that one. It exists. We have it. And he got it. And he started remembering shit. So he starts remembering that he didn't pass out, but he was in a lot of pain. And that humanoid creatures that look like grasshoppers, which, by the way, I guess he had a fascination with grasshoppers after that, that was a newfound fascination. And it's because he didn't know why at first. He all of a sudden liked grasshoppers. A lot. I guess it's weird. Grasshopper, I think.
This whole story is fucking weird.
It is weird. But in another interview, because this is from the story, and then an interview, however, 20 some odd years later, I heard him say this about them, that they were brownish gray skin and they looked more aquatic in the face. Like their eyes and mouth were frog-like and they had two slits for noses and they had rough skin and he said strange fingers. So I'm assuming the grasshopper thing might be their, I don't know, they have like long, crazy, weird limbs or some shit. And I mean, grasshoppers kind of have big eyes too for their bodies.
I know they do.
But insect, aquatic, frog shit is going on here. Grayish brown skin that he can't really describe the color of. Just grayish brown, brownish gray, I think he said. So at this point, his human reaction is he pulls his M16 and he was in the article, he says he was going to shoot one of them, but one of them grabbed the gun and spoke to him. Now, in another video that I saw, he says that they actually did start shooting, which had no effect. But this voice said to him, and it's a voice that he said he recognized even from his childhood. Like, he's like, oh, fuck. Like, it's all starting to come to him. Like, he knows this motherfucker.
Uh-huh.
And the being, the entity told him, he's like, we got to take care of your eye or you're going to lose it. Like, hey, man, let's get to reality here. You've been shot in the fucking eye with an alien laser in a weird alien tunnel in Vietnam. And we got to take care of that eye. Quit trying to shoot me. I'm trying to help you. Reality's fucking weird, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's bringing this guy back down to reality here. Let's take care of that eye. First things first. So he's like, yeah, it'll be sore for a few days, you know, whatever. So, but the creatures would ask him, and he said they asked him this all the time, like whenever he encountered them, they asked, why are you here and what are you doing here? This isn't your nature. You should not be involved in this, what they call a war. Like the aliens, he claims, are very peaceful, don't understand war, and don't understand why we engage in it, and are wondering why he's even there. And we'll get into it later, because he's been in communication with these one specific alien his whole life almost. And he claims, he's like, I shouldn't even be in the military. And they're wondering, like, Clifford, like, why are you even here? You don't belong here, you know? Like, imagine that in Vietnam, an alien telling you, why are you even out here?
Yeah.
After a laser shot your eye out. So, anyway, that's all he remembered. Right? That's all he remembers from the doctor shot, is that he was with the aliens. He was going to try to shoot them, or did start trying to shoot them, and it had no effect. And the creatures are like, what the fuck are you doing here, man? Take care of your eye. Why are you even in the military? What's going on with you, Clifford? You've gone askew on us. And so after all that, the incident, that's the whole incident and his recollection of the incident. And after, the colonel told him, this is the cover story. That his eye was injured by an insect. He said he got sprayed in his eye and it cut his retina. And his burns were sunburn. But he said you had to be careful with shit like that, because he said you could get an Article 15. You know what that is? Non-judicial punishment. Or even court-martialed for a sunburn or anything deemed trying to avoid duty.
Uh-huh.
He said you could get court-martialed basically for intentionally getting sunburned. Which...
Well, yeah, they always threaten us with about that dumb bullshit that you could get an Article 15 if you got a sunburn. I remember, yeah.
You could
because what it is it's taking you out of action.
Right.
And you can't perform your duty 100%.
Right. Yeah.
And it, even though it might be unintentional, you could be prosecuted theoretically under the UCMJ.
That's so crazy. It's like
it is.
No sex, no swimming, and no sunbathing before battle, boys. We need you in tip top shape.
Mm-hmm. Well, you belong to the government. You're a GI.
Yeah, you got to do what they tell you. It's so funny that you can, in theory, get put in jail for getting a sunburn.
Yeah, we always really thought that was funny.
They must have been handing out gallons and gallons of sunblock, though, huh? Like,
lather up, boys. If you're in a,
it's gonna be a hot one.
You had to protect yourself, yeah. Wearing a proper clothing, or you had to have some kind of sunscreen or something.
Well, it's just good common sense.
To protect yourself.
You gotta protect yourself from the enemy and the sun.
Yeah, just like taking salt pills if you're in a, you know, the tropics or whatever.
Yeah.
That and quinine pills or whatever to protect you against malaria.
Yeah, it's just good. It's just good common sense, and you just feel better. You got to keep your wits about you. You got to keep your head, you know? So,
well,
what?
Some of the aspects of this guy's story,
mm-hmm,
is very similar to, I don't know, it kind of equates to what a couple of stories I heard about other supposed UFO encounters with patrol boats.
Oh, like in wartime?
Yeah, during the Vietnam War, there were a couple of instances that were documented of the alien encounters on the river patrol boats.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they called them PBRs.
I did not know
you
that.
Know? Yeah, and anyway, it's some of it just sounds somewhat eerily connected with a couple of instances that I heard of.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, long story short, the two instances I'm talking about involved these river patrol boats. One of them was ours, you know, the U.S. Navy with some Army personnel on it. And another one was the Australians. They both had encounters, supposedly, with UFOs,
mm-hmm,
that they couldn't explain, and they actually fired on them.
Of course.
And they were fired back. They were retaliated.
Oh, you know, really?
They got fire in retaliation from the aliens. And the Americans suffered some casualties, but no deaths on their boat. But the Australians had three personnel killed when they got the return fire.
Well, what were they shot with?
The whole thing is the fire that they received from the alien craft was the same munitions that they had fired on the aliens. So they got hit with their own munitions.
Like, it was proven it was the same exact rounds that were shot at them, shot back at them or something? Like, they
shot, yes.
Like, they stopped it in midair and then just fired it right back or something?
Somehow, yes. Somehow the aliens took those rounds that were of munitions that was fired at them and hurled them back.
Yeah.
At those boats.
Yeah, because you can't take a fired bullet and put it in another gun and shoot it, even if it's the same gun, right? Like, you can't reuse a round like that.
And there were some things there that you said that this guy said that was kind of connected to that, like the things that you think you saw and what was not actually there, or you didn't think it was there,
mm-hmm,
you know, with the shoveling and the soldiers, you know, that you think you saw.
Right.
That kind of, you know, it kind of reminded me of those two instances. And you see it, but you don't believe it.
Right. Well, it's just
you see it, and it happens, and it. But it, you know, you see, how in the fuck did that happen? Oh, right. How could that happen? You know, it's virtually impossible.
Well, think about this cube in the middle of the jungle in a tunnel that has
that
has a tunnel entrance that apparently is in the jungle, which is weird, or under the ground. Like it's when you can see out in front of you and they can't see, like, I mean, it's hard to explain. Like it's a hologram. Like you can walk right through it.
But like some kind of hologram type thing.
But real people are inside it that you can't see. It's like when you're in it, you're a fucking hologram too or something. You know?
Yeah, well, try to figure that shit out.
Like, really, it's, is it dimension hopping? Or
I don't know.
What the fuck, man? I mean, stuff like that is crazy. Like, yeah, the Australians getting shot with their own bullets is, I mean, that just seems like some force field
shit. How in the hell can you fight an enemy that can turn your own munitions against you?
Yeah, exactly.
And it doesn't harm them.
Exactly.
Now, how in the hell can you possibly win a fight? You know, if that shit happens.
Right. And Clifford Stone,
you're fucked from the get-go.
Clifford Stone says, I believe it was in this incident. Maybe it was another one. I don't think I'm mixing them, because, like I said, one version he says they he was going to shoot, and in another version he says they did start shooting, and that's what he doesn't remember much after that. But he said, I don't remember, of course, but like if the bullets hit any of these entities, it didn't hurt them at all.
Yeah.
Like it either bounced right off of them or went through them or just didn't fucking do anything. But he did say they had like rough skin. He always says they have rough skin. No matter what color the skin is or what type of entity it is, it seems like they always seem to have rough. He never uses the word reptile, but I assume it might be reptile-ish.
I don't know.
Yeah, but so back to what I was saying about the colonel saying what the official cover story is. Like, if anybody fucking asks you officially what the hell happened to you out there, where you're, first off, not even supposed to fucking be. Like, this is the other thing. It's like, you can get court-martialed for getting a fucking sunburn, but no one's asking why he's even out there. Why are you where you are? You're a fucking typist,
you can get court-martialed for that, too.
And that's another big hole in his story is he's not even supposed to be there, and he's worried about getting in trouble for getting a sunburn and, like, an injured eye or whatever. It's like, dude, you got bigger problems than that if this is all true, right? I mean, he's not even supposed to be there. That's a bigger no-no than a fucking burn on his body, right? I mean, a much bigger one. I mean, I assume. I don't fucking know. Maybe sunburns are just the biggest. You just can't do it in the military. Sunburns are bigger than going AWOL. I don't know. But
you're not supposed to destroy or harm government property, whether it's intentional or unintentional. If your actions lead to, you know, destruction of military assets, you could be prosecuted under the ECMJ.
Well, what if you, like, rip your shirt, your government-issue shirt or pants or boots? You get in trouble for that?
Oh, that's considered, that's considered expendable.
Oh.
Like you are in combat.
Yeah, you're. The uniform and anything under it is expendable.
Yeah, but if you, it's just something. It has to be the circumstance of where you did an act that was not acceptable under military standards.
And what he's doing is very not acceptable. Sneak, but
without orders, you know, acting upon his own cognition,
right?
You know, without orders,
right? Well,
I mean, that right there could land you in Leavenworth.
If you want to believe this story, you have to believe that this colonel, this mysterious colonel, is just saving his ass. You know, like he's...
It's not like that colonel guy is a, kind of like a, what do they call him, Men in Black.
Yeah. Yeah, and...
character type.
Also, you have to believe that Clifford is a... not necessarily... he is a part of something bigger than he's aware of. And he is actually allowed to do this shit. But... his whole desk job thing is almost like a fucking cover for what he is doing in the shadows. And he doesn't even really know that he's doing what he's doing or some shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can, whatever. So, I'll try this for a third time. The official cover story is that they, you know, yeah, he got injured by an insect and a sunburn, yada, yada. But the whole thing about the tunnels is, they did uncover an underground location that was brought about by elements of the 88th NVA Division, 347th NVA Brigade, who were working on an aspect of producing the bubonic plague to introduce to specific base camps to inflict biological casualties among the American forces, even the South Vietnamese forces. So officially... they were trying to stop the NVA from spreading the bubonic plague in that tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
If it came up. If anyone asked what he was doing there, I guess that was the official story. But he's not even supposed to fucking be there, I guess. So, Stone kept coming back to the bodies that he saw after this whole thing, however many days passed or whatever. He like couldn't get over the fact that he saw these... American soldiers and Vietnamese soldiers and other creatures or whatever, aliens in there and organs and shit. And the colonel told him that some of the organs and bodies that he saw were synthetic, which eased his mind. But also that some of the bodies were extracted from the cave and they were identified and they were killed in combat and not by aliens. The aliens apparently just took them in there out of curiosity. So after this,
I could possibly see that happen.
Yeah, me too. So after this,
that's part of
it. Stone goes back to his normal duties, but they switch his shift from 8 to 4 to midnight to 8 a.m. to keep him from sneaking out. So he doesn't get into any trouble. They just switch his shift at the desk here. And then, you know, after that he goes into some story about meeting his wife and getting in more fights with the military about what he's doing there and blah, blah, blah. So that's the whole article from the UFO magazine 1998 that he wrote. And that's the story. Now, I want to get into more about his history and this colonel guy, because he's got this a whole lifelong thing. A lot of stuff that I've read, and like even I think like Whitley Strieber and other people, it's like you have these people who've been abducted. And are people who have communication with aliens, they have this one incident in when they're an adult and they think it's their first incident, and then they'll do some sort of hypnosis or regressive therapy or something, and it comes out like, holy fuck, this has been happening my whole life. And then they start remembering everything, like, holy fuck, oh my god, it's so obvious, like I've been doing this my whole life, that wasn't the first time, I know these motherfuckers. Like, they just went decades in their waking life forgetting that they were in contact with aliens. And that kind of seems to be the case.
I've heard of such, too.
It kind of seems to be the case with Clifford Stone, but it also could be like, this is my introduction to him was this story, and this was not his first incident. But he seems to, like, be telling these stories of these UFO retrieval missions that he's gone on, and he's been on many. He said, the unit that he was a part of, he says, actually started as the Interplanetary Phenomena Research Unit that MacArthur and James Doolittle started back in World War II. And they were just looking into crashes.
Oh, really?
Like, they were looking into, like, I don't think, maybe it was UFO shit, Foo Fighters stuff or whatever. But the unit that, or whatever group he was a part of, eventually, I guess, was the 4602nd Air Intelligence Service Squad, which originally in World War II was field exploitation of downed enemy aircraft and personnel and of documents, you know? Like, you know, crash site shit, retrieval, trying to get intel, right? But then after the war, what's that? You were muffled.
Now, the Air Force and the Air Corps has always had, you know, retrieval
right.
personnel.
Yeah, exactly.
For crashes.
But after the Second War, apparently this 4602nd Air Intelligence Service Squad kind of morphed, and they had a peacetime mission. And were reactivated in 1953 to recover UFOs mm-hmm. instead of enemy aircraft and shit like that.
Well, there's been a lot of ex-military people come out and say that they were members of those types of units, and that they actually have protocols.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they've got written instructions
mm-hmm.
of, you know, how to handle the situations.
Right.
No, there's an actual SOP.
There's a manual. What's an SOP?
Standard operating procedure.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, so... it's official. Like, he's officially a part of these... He's like a UFO specialist. Like, crash retrieval specialist, mm-hmm. nuclear, like, kind of cleanup... Shit like that. But his whole story in the military, and this is why you know, when the alien was asking, like, what are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here, kind of thing. He wasn't even supposed to be in the military because he got rejected.
Well, why the fuck would he say that to him?
Well, listen,
I don't understand that.
Why the alien would say you're not supposed to be here?
Yeah, and you're not supposed to be in the military. What the fuck is up with that?
Okay, so this...
that don't make any sense.
Well, this alien... He's been in contact with aliens basically since he was 7. And I'll tell you a little bit more about that here in a second. But the whole military thing is... When he tried to join in 1967. He tried to join the Air Force, I think. And he said he was 4F. Which I guess is a medical issue. And
usually, yeah, you know, oh yeah, it's got to be some type of usually a physical disability.
Yeah, so he got rejected, and they basically told him, like, you don't have to worry about ever joining the military because you can't. So enjoy your life, like, do something else. Basically, you'll never hear from us again. But for some reason, they hit him back up and they wanted to reevaluate him. And he ended up joining the Army.
Yeah.
The
U.S. Army has been known to them and the Marines, but the Army especially will take a lot of 4F rejections.
But he said
they'll get them in service.
But he says that they sought him out and wanted him to get reevaluated, and he, I guess, got retested, and they're like, yeah, you're good. Come on in. And he thinks that it's so he could, they knew he was in contact, and that's why he was there, to do what he ended up doing, going to these crash sites and communicating with aliens and shit.
So that's why they wanted him, huh?
Maybe.
They had a dossier on him, more or less, huh?
He thinks it's all, like, out of his control. And by the way, this whole thing with the... He doesn't... he starts off by saying that he believes that there's an outside agency in control other than the army with all this crazy shit with the colonel and stuff. Like, it's above and beyond. Like, it's above, you know, commander-in-chief or something. Like, it's true black ops shit, where it's just, like, the military...
Quite possible.
A lot of people in the military don't even know what the fuck's going on, what he's doing. They're not supposed to know.
I've often thought that myself.
Well, which could be true. So, this is what he thinks about the colonel. He thinks that the colonel was assigned to him in 1969 when he was 18, 19 years old. But it goes even deeper than that. But, like, it's so fucking weird. Okay, I'm going to try to piece this together.
This guy's a hybrid.
From different sources. So, the colonel has been with him for a long time. All right, so... The entity that's been with him his whole life, okay, is his name is Corona with a K. Corona. And he says Corona is a 5 foot tall green alien that has rough skin, big round black eyes pointed in on the inside, kind of, I guess, the almond shaped. And he met him when he was a kid. He said he was living in the country. He's from Ohio, oddly enough, probably, I think, sort of kind of close to Wright Pat. And I think Kecksburg as well, in western Pennsylvania. But he and his friend saw some, I don't know, dancing figures or lights or something up on this hill. And... he said he got freaked out and hid, and that Corona, like, found him and put his hand on him, his big bony hand on him or something, and, like, knew where he was. And ever since then, he's, like, basically, like, I know where you are at all times. Like, we're, like, I'm basically with you your whole life, and I'm going to learn from you. You know, he's, like, trying to understand. He said Corona is just a part of a race that wants to understand us. And his whole...
Good luck with that.
Yeah, and he says Corona told him this: hopefully you will learn some things from me, but I will learn a lifetime from you. And so, okay, this isn't the colonel. All right, I'm mixing up two people. The colonel was assigned to him when he joined the military when he was 18, 19, he thinks, to be his special handler, I guess, for these crazy events. Now, there's another person, a military person, that is a part of his life when he is 7 years old. After he meets Corona. And this guy's name is Captain Brown. And he says that Captain Brown is the only other person that knows about Corona other than him. And he says that Captain Brown, like, approached him when he was a kid, bought him a root beer float in, like a kind of a UFO magazine of the time. I forget, he said the name of it, Strange Fucking Tales, or it was something like that. Bought him a magazine. And then he went and talked to both of his parents. Like, he sat his parents down and must have been like, all right, look, this is what's going to happen to your son's whole life. He's in touch with an alien named Corona. And he's going to be in our employ forever. Like, we're going to be keeping tabs on him. And that's just, you know, whatever. And he doesn't know what they talked about, but he thinks that basically Captain Brown sat his parents down and basically told them the score. And his parents were like, okay, we'll keep our mouths shut. And our son is going to live that life.
Uh-huh.
You think this shit happens?
Well, the more you tell me about this, the more I've heard about this individual or a story similar to this. And but they say these UFO researchers say that there are a lot of people out there that are kept tabs on
mm-hmm.
all over the world.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
By aliens. And whether they're hybrids or not, they're not sure. But they like to kind of try to keep it in the family, too. You know?
Well, at least they're open about
bloodlines.
It. Oh, yeah. So you actually think that Clifford Stone might be a descendant of whatever race of alien Corona is?
Well, that could very well possibly be. Because
we've talked about that before, too.
That's a possibility. Yeah, because like I say, it sounds like it might be some type of hybrid. Like I say, a lot of the UFO researchers have found that people that claim to be in touch with an alien race or entity
mm-hmm.
that they been in touch with almost their entire life or as long as they can remember, and not only them but people in their family, other people in their family, cousins, sisters, you know, brothers, that whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they like to keep it close,
yeah,
so to speak, in the bloodlines.
Yeah, well,
so that's not much new there.
I
think that's quite possible too.
Well, he said something interesting in an interview. He said that if you have a child that says that they have friends, and they're imaginary friends, that you might want to consider they're in contact with aliens and have been chosen by them. Like he was. Because he says they talk to him telepathically. No one else can hear them. No one else can see them.
Oh, yeah. A lot of those people claim that, too. They claim that happens.
And this guy, I'm telling you, if you watch interviews with him, he speaks very calmly and very, like, genuinely about his experiences. I mean, it's very believable.
Yeah, the more we talk about this guy, it's starting to ring a bell. I think he has been interviewed by some top-notch UFO researchers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's been a part...
You know, like the Ancient Aliens people...
Oh yeah, probably.
MUFON, you know, all these high up people that know a lot about this kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
I think I saw an episode where they had some interviews with him and some dealings.
Well, let me look it up.
It's kind of ringing a bell somehow.
Yeah, I mean he was pretty well known for about 20 years in the community. So he was probably a part of all of those fucking shows. And he was on Coast to Coast. You know, he was a guest on Coast to Coast. I don't know who interviewed him. I don't know if it was Art Bell or fucking
I think the MUFON people were really interested in him. I know MUFON is really interested in people that has claimed like he has.
Mm-hmm.
They're really interested in that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, I don't.
Well, they should be.
I can't really find anything on a basic search that he was on Ancient Aliens or anything. But he was on all the panels, all the fucking big events. He gave speeches. He was making the rounds, man. He did radio shows. He did podcasts. I'm sure. Just like
I'm sure he's got some.
He was well known.
Some kind of dealings with those people.
But yeah. So he's been in contact with, so with the context that he's been in touch with Corona since seven years old, there's Captain Brown, who is a military man who's been in his life since he was 7 years old, basically. he joins the military after getting the 4F ranking or filing or whatever the fuck you want to call it. They seek him out to have him join. He joins, and then he becomes part of this alien crash retrieval fucking unit. And all this, he goes on this crazy... It's like that's his life trajectory. Well,
that only makes sense.
Right? So, this whole shit...
Something about it, that only makes sense.
Right. So, this whole shit with the cube...
If he was in the military, get involved in something like that.
Exactly. Like, him sneaking out in the middle of the night and not getting into trouble, and him finding the cube and having these experiences. And he's had multiple experiences. It's all part of the fucking plan, right?
Could be.
I mean, I remember I was saying, like, I didn't know if he shot or didn't shoot. I don't think he did blast off any rounds in the cube laser incident. But he did tell another story about going on a recovery of a B-52 in Cambodia. And the colonel was there, and they got on a plane, and then they didn't say anything about where they were going. There was like, get on the fucking plane, we're going on a mission, basically. And they were showing pictures of like the craft and maybe some alien entities, but he said at that time when he just joined, he didn't know if that was real or they were testing them. Like trying to fuck with them to test their metal or their like how gullible they were or some shit. Like he didn't know if the pictures were real or not, and or if this was like fake or not. He's like, you always had to be on your toes, it sounds like. But they get on this fucking plane, and they know they're going to this crash site. And yeah, there's this whole story about like they stopped to refuel, and they were told they were going somewhere in like Florida or somewhere in the United States or whatever, and they end up going to fucking Cambodia. It's like, okay, that's obviously a much, much longer flight. And the colonel, like, threatened to shoot one of the guys for asking questions, basically. Like, you know, like, don't fucking... Like, you know we're not going to where we said we were going, and shut your mouth. And, so they landed in airbase, and he said they got in a helicopter and went to the B-52. And that's where they found the crash, and these gray entities showed up, rolled up on them. And he said that they were 3 to 4 feet tall, these specific ones, and they had spindly arms and legs. And he said they were more like Pillsbury Doughboy than string bean, like they had meat on their bones, you know? And but then he said they started talking to him like they knew who he was. And they said his name, like, instead of calling him Clifford... They called him Cliff Ord. No, Cliff Ford. They were like, Cliff Ford, you're not supposed to be here. What are you doing here? Like, again, like, what are you doing here? You're not supposed to be here. And he said he started freaking out, and he called them VC and started to shoot. Because I feel like this was before the cube incident. This was like maybe his first crash. And he freaked out and started shooting. So everyone else started shooting. And it had no effect on him. And after that whole thing, like, they didn't want to believe that they saw what they saw and shot who they shot. So the official thing was like, yeah, you encountered some rebels and you killed some of them, actually. to, like, make them believe that they fought humans, I guess, instead of aliens. To perpetuate the lie. But, you know, he knew the truth for real. Like, he wasn't believing the bullshit. Like, even though he was in shock. But these entities that they encounter, he firmly believes that they do not want war. They are curious. And they honestly do not understand how violent we are towards each other. And that all they want is peace. And he thinks that if a rogue element of aliens wanted to take over Earth, that there are several groups of aliens that would stop them. Like, there'd be a fucking Star Wars to save Earth, basically. And yeah, they just the aliens that he's in contact with just want to understand us. They don't fucking get our ways. So they're studying us, and he's part of it.
That's quite possible.
And his whole military journey and all this shit is like, I don't get it. It's like the aliens are like, why are you here? But it seems like the military knows he's in contact with him, and they're using him for their own needs. And the aliens are like, you shouldn't be doing this. You shouldn't even be in the military. You weren't supposed to be in the military. Why are you letting them put you in the military? I don't know, man.
Yeah.
So, well, that's pretty much all I got on Clifford Stone. I didn't look into his whole history. I really just wanted to tell you that one story, and then there's just a little too much to get into. He also spent time in Roswell after Vietnam. He was stationed there or some shit, and he's like thought that was for a reason too, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he thinks this whole time in the military was secretly about UFOs, like whether they were like open with him or not about what he was doing. He just kept finding himself in these situations, and he found out retroactively that he had been in contact with aliens.
Sounds like he was some kind of a favorite. He sounds like he was some kind of a favorite or special. You know,
it's certainly interesting because with all of these, I mean, he was never abducted. He never says he was abducted. He never even talks about abduction that I know of. But just the fact that he was in contact, it's almost like a fucking program, right? Like he's a part of some like exchange program or something, right?
Yeah.
And the aliens are getting what they want out of him, but the military is getting what they want out of him too, because they know he's in contact and can maybe help them understand. But it seems like the aliens don't want him to be a part of the military, or are just confused as to why he's there all the time. Which is just it's just fucking interesting. And what's the truth? Is any of it true?
Same story.
What do you believe?
I don't really know what to make of it.
It is kind of weird.
I don't really know what to make of it.
It's like you would think because Captain... Okay. So...
There's just a lot of weird shit there.
When Corona comes to him when he's a kid, and then like the next day or whatever, Captain Brown shows up, do you think it's because the military knows that he's been contacted? Or...
I don't think that's a possibility, too.
Well, I mean, they obviously know he's been contacted. But did they have anything to do with the contact? You know what I mean? Like, are the aliens and the military operating separately? Or are they operating together and using Clifford to work together? Or are they... You know, the aliens chose Clifford, the military found out about it, and now they're using Clifford to learn more. That makes more sense to me.
Yeah, it could be.
And they're like wiping his fucking memory and shit, and who knows what they're doing.
I don't know. There's a lot of weird stuff there. I can't decipher all that.
The military's trying to get their hands on these little fuckers, these little people, these little aliens. And they just can't do it, and they're getting frustrated and sneaking out in the middle of the night, going into their tunnels and shit, trying to get their hands on these little people. And they can't do it.
Yeah, well, personally, I wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't fucking do it.
I've never had the hankering to, you know, to, I don't mind a little bit of a challenge and some risk, but that kind of stuff is just a little bit too much.
But his whole thing,
but
now,
you've got to do it yourself.
Now that you know what you know about him sneaking, about his history, him sneaking out into the free fire zone makes a little more sense if he was somehow like given that mission or some sort of odd like programmed to do it beyond his will.
Well, the thing I want to know is why did he want to do it in the first place?
But the colonel met him out here and is like, you're late. So instinctively he knew he had to get out there, but he thought he was just going out trying to find a fight, but the colonel's waiting on him. So they
just
must have
shown him this cave, huh?
They must have fucking what did they do? Program his ass or something, you know? What the fuck? How did he know to go out there and do something so reckless so the colonel could find him? Like, he doesn't remember it as like, I gotta go meet the colonel. He remembers it as, I was bloodthirsty and wanted to kill a motherfucker, so I snuck out. And the colonel was just there waiting for me, saying I was late. Like, that's fucking weird.
I don't know. It sounds like he didn't even know.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like, you know, the men in black, you know, look into this fucking thing, wipe your memory, but you still know you got to be somewhere. You just don't know why. So you created a whole other scenario of why you got to be there.
And what do they call that? Do you have this? You have a, I don't know.
I don't even know.
A compulsion, or you feel compelled
mm-hmm.
to do something.
Right.
And you just can't stop yourself from doing it.
It has no impulse control.
Yeah.
But why the impulse? The impulse is implanted
somehow,
subconsciously or something.
Well, I've felt that way before sometimes about some things. I've felt compelled that I just got to do this, or I've got to do something, you know.
But did it lead to an altercation in the Vietnamese jungle with a mysterious man named the Colonel?
No.
You just end up at KFC.
Huh?
You just end up at KFC ordering a bucket of chicken every time you get an impulse.
No, I'm not talking about it. That's a craving. kind of the same thing, but when you feel like you're compelled to do something, you've got to do it.
Right.
I mean, you have no choice. In the matter, you've got this physical and mental compulsion that where if you don't get the need, you feel like you're gonna go fucking nuts.
Right.
It's almost like an addiction.
Yeah.
You're addicted to something.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to do it or else.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
He certainly had the compulsion, but this is the crazy thing. He said he did this multiple times, like snuck out and got into firefights with the VC. But this one night, the colonel's there because he saw those lights. He saw some lights. I might have brushed over that. He and someone else saw some lights on the hill, and then the next night he snuck out, and that's when he saw the colonel, because he was sneaking out to check out the lights that particular night. But I guess that makes sense. The colonel was waiting for him after he saw the lights.
It was the signal.
Did I miss that? Did I not say that in my original? I didn't tell you that.
No, you didn't say anything about that.
I must have fucking missed that. Yeah, that's right. Shit.
Maybe that was his signal.
Oh, that was a big part of the story. Yeah, he snuck out that particular night because the night before he saw some lights up on the hill, like red, green, and blue self-luminous night lights. Like through the trees. And then the next night he snuck out with his gun and two rounds to check out the lights. Yeah, I skipped over that little tidbit. Fucked that up, didn't I?
It's a little tidbit.
It's just a little bit. A little tidbit.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. These people that have these supposedly, you know, affiliations with aliens, they do things, they they do things a lot of times that they don't remember, and they don't know why they that they don't remember. They do things that they do remember. They don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that they do remember it or not don't remember it, and they don't know why they're gonna or want to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I don't know, it's just weird.
Right.
And there's really no explanation for it for, you know, people that have those types of instances.
Right. Yeah, man.
They
I
don't
mean,
even know.
I the way
and even the researchers can't figure it out.
The way he tells the way he tells his story when you watch interviews with him, you do believe him. You really do. Like, he tells it so matter-of-factly that you can't help but be like, man, this motherfucker just, he's not bullshitting, you know? He really isn't. Either he experienced it or he thinks he did, but the way he's telling the story, it's true regardless, you know?
Yeah. Well, I guess that's about the end of it then, because I don't know. I don't know what else to say about this shit.
Yeah. Well, you know, in the military, there's plenty. I would love to read a whole, like, fucking anthology of just people's stories of being in war during wartime and those experiences like he's had, because what better time to show up and create chaos than in the middle of chaos? Like,
yeah, I suppose so.
You can't. People don't believe what they're fucking seeing and doing in the first place, and then some even weirder shit happens. Like, how fucking weird. Like, that's got to be. And plus, it's so. Like, people think they're going crazy all the time, I'm sure. So,
well,
how
you
do you even know you believe what you saw?
Well, if you speak to people that have been in, you know, combat, especially intense combat, they can't believe the shit that happens. They did this. They just, you know, they see things, they do things that they just, you know, saw before it happened that it was just unimaginable.
Mm-hmm.
Eh. You know, that they just didn't think that anything like that could possibly happen.
Right. Well, hey.
What?
This guy's got. He's got stories like this story and that B-52 bomber are the only two stories that I read. He's got a whole other one. He's got a whole other one from Indiantown Gap, Pennsylvania, which
Indiantown Gap.
Yeah, and he's been on many retrieval missions, so he's got all sorts of stories, either firsthand or he knows of them. So he's got plenty of stories I haven't even touched. So if anyone wants to, you know, obviously do their own research, I'm not like trying to tell this guy's whole story or anything, but if you're interested, there's plenty of stuff out there. I think interviews with him, and he's written a couple books that I've heard aren't very good, but they at least, like, you know, tell the story of shit that he's seen. And that's always interesting. So yeah, this guy's got a interesting, wild ass history in the military, and he's known as a whistleblower. He's coming out saying, like, yeah, I was in the fucking military, and this is what they made me do. So,
well, there's a lot of military veterans that can tell you stories, or there, and there are, believe it or not, there's quite a few interesting military stories that go back hundreds of years.
Right.
If not thousands.
Right.
Some type of strange encounters goes all the way back to Roman times.
I love that concept. Like, I didn't really watch the movie because I heard it was pretty bad, but I was really stoked on the concept of the aliens versus cowboys, or aliens and cowboys or something. I was like, what a great idea.
Oh, yeah, I watched that. I finally watched that. That actually wasn't a bad movie.
It's such a good concept. Because you don't expect aliens in the Wild West, but then you take it back, like you said, in like fucking Roman, Greek, all that shit. Like go back to fucking the beginning of time. Dinosaurs put UFOs. I mean, in theory, in a lot of people's minds, I mean, they existed before the fucking Earth even existed. So they can literally be anywhere in Earth's timeline. And that is such, that's so intriguing.
Yeah.
But the Wild West is like kind of the most fun to think about.
Well, there's quite a few. There have been quite a few instances in the, you know, the old American West, especially with you know, Native American tribes.
Oh yeah, man, it'd be so fucking, you know, weird,
that kind of stuff.
It's just all that like machismo, and like we started this whole thing. You're talking about Clint Eastwood and tough guys and shootouts, and next thing you know, a fucking UFO shows up. Like that dude, that motherfucker's gonna piss himself. The toughest guy, the toughest guy in town. The fucking, yeah.
Well,
they're gonna shit their pants. Humble pie.
Kind of like that old adage, that old saying, truth is stranger than fiction.
Yeah.
Some of this shit is just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Even though it's true.
Could be true. Anyway, thanks for being here with me. That's an interesting story. I'm going to try
that. That got me thinking about a lot of stuff again. I'm not sure. You know, some of the military encounters.
Yeah, it'd be fun to dredge up more military stories. I might do that just because I do like hearing particularly military stories, because I mean that's where all the secrets are, and some people witness shit they shouldn't witness, and they're privy to things, and they get some secrets, and then they divulge them secrets. And
well you know that George Washington supposedly had some type of alien encounter at Valley Forge.
No, I did not know about this.
Huh?
Well, I'm gonna have to look into this now. I'd love to hear about that.
Oh yeah, he's supposed that when after the Battle of Trenton, you know, after the after they George and his boys, you know, took Trenton, then they wintered up there at Valley Forge. He supposedly was out one night and saw some lights that he was drawn to.
Mm-hmm.
And he supposedly got some wisdom from them.
Mm-hmm. About the battle? The forthcoming battle?
About the, about the course of the war and the future of the United States, that kind of stuff.
So the United States exists because...
What would happen after the war is over.
The advice that George Washington got.
And how to win the war.
Okay.
He was given some wisdom.
I got it. So
supposedly,
America owes aliens
because
everything.
You know, at that time the colonial army was in pretty bad shape.
Huh.
My. Until the Battle of Trenton.
They don't teach you that in history class.
No.
I have to look into that. That's fucking funny.
He actually told people about that. It was documented.
I want to read an extraterrestrial's history of the United States. I want to read that book.
Oh, they're very interested in us. They were very interested in us, and of course, you know, the Greeks and the Romans.
But an extraterrestrial's history of the United States by Invader Zim. What was that? Sorry.
Huh?
What was that?
I said that they were especially, you know, interested in the ancient Greeks and Romans.
There were much less people around back then, so they were probably more present. Off doing all sorts of stuff in the middle of nowhere. Showing themselves more often.
There's also a story of Emperor Constantine. You know, when he was about to go into a major battle. I forget the name of it. But anyway, it was when the Roman Empire was divided and they were fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
He was going up against a rebel army of the Romans, and he supposedly had an alien encounter that showed him the way how to win the battle, and he promised that if his army was victorious, he would convert the Roman Empire to Christianity. And lo and behold, you know, look what happened there. they won, uh-huh. and you know, the Roman Empire, you know, adopted Christianity after that as the official religion.
Is this alien entity God by chance?
Well,
a lot of people
supposedly.
Have.
Supposedly, it's a biblical thing. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I got it. It's a biblical story.
People believe in that shit, so why not? Why not believe it's an alien?
But anyway, that's how. That's supposedly how Christianity was adopted gotcha. By the Roman Empire. Finally. When Constantine had his encounter with a supposedly divine entity.
That could have been an alien.
It could, yes.
Or it is an alien. That's why
it could have been some type of alien intervention, imparting knowledge to him and such.
God is the ultimate alien, man.
There's quite a few encounters in the Civil War and Korean War.
Yeah, Civil War would be a good place. Like, it's, you know, they made that, what is that, Lincoln Vampire Hunter movie or whatever. They need to make the aliens during the Civil War movie. That'd be fun.
Well, there were quite a few reports of Civil War soldiers seeing, you know, strange things. And they were usually at the site of a major battle.
You know, well, it makes sense.
As a matter of fact, I think there were reports of Gettysburg.
I was going to say.
What was it? There was another one. What was that one? Gettysburg was one of them. What was that other big battle?
Antietam?
Earlier in the war.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't remember anything. There might have been something in Antietam, but I don't recall. No, it was Shiloh.
Okay.
Might have been Shiloh.
An alien encounter at Shiloh. I have to look into it.
Yeah. There was quite a few, you know, major battles fought in the American Civil War that there was reports of UFO encounters. By both sides.
Well, we'll have to do this again. I'll have to look into some more military sightings because it's definitely interesting. Like I said, what better place to show up?
Yeah, well, the aliens were on the sides of certain individuals and certain societies throughout history, they say.
They're always with the good guys.
Well, usually.
Well, it seems. I don't know throughout history.
Usually they are, yeah. They kind of help. They supposedly help guide some of the major decisions and events throughout history.
The way Clifford Stone talks about his race of alien that's with him and trying to study him is they don't even understand why we're so violent and they don't want violence. They're just trying to look at us and understand why the hell we do what we do. Which is take
well, there's actually been reports of. Well, I remember one report by an army unit in Korea. One of the toughest units in the U.S. Army was fighting a battle with the Chinese, and they were fighting. They were pushing the Chinese back. You know, they were retaking a hill and some territory.
Mm-hmm.
And for some ungodly reason, there were some. I don't know. They said they were like orbs and shining. Really shining, intense, burning lights
uh-huh.
that made the American soldiers sick.
Sick, huh?
And they had to retreat. And when they got back and were examined by medical personnel, they had signs of radiation poisoning.
Okay.
And burns. You know, this, and that made them have to stop the attack. So for some reason, aliens didn't want us to win that one. At least not completely.
Interesting.
I always thought that was a strange one.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about it to say who was right or wrong in that situation.
Well, like I say that,
I mean,
yeah,
it's
I
always
can't
wrong
either.
To
I'd,
kill each other, but
nobody could have. None of the soldiers, you know, enlisted men or officers could explain what the hell happened.
Yeah.
Except that those fucking things just made most of the soldiers really sick and they couldn't, you know, continue the attack.
Oh, very. Who knows, man?
They had to stop.
Who knows? I don't know.
That's a weird one. That's another weird one there, too.
Who knows what the interest of any alien race is and why they're particularly interested in any sort of skirmish on the planet Earth, but it doesn't seem to be the same race or species of alien every time, so whoever, it's the same shit. It's just like, who's pulling the strings, you know? And what do they want?
Well, my feeling is, you know, whichever one of those races out there that wanted to, they could stop us from doing this stupid bullshit, because they could just neutralize all of our shit if they wanted to. There's been, you know, a lot of incidents of that shit happening, too.
Well, I assume that they got their own left-wing and right-wing shit, and they're fighting over how to handle us, and then they can't get enough votes to do one thing or another, and it's just in limbo, and, you know, we just can't get handled because they can't handle their, you know, they're not in agreement on how to handle us. Even our handlers are too democratic.
That seems to be the case. They, you know, pick and choose when they want to do stuff like that. You know, like when they, you know, disarm our missile bases and ICBMs, rolling with us. They do it to the Russians and the Chinese too.
Yeah. Well, they need to do something with Russia.
They've all had instances of where their nuclear arsenals have been disarmed.
They just need to step in and end that whole fucking, that whole thing tomorrow. Yesterday, even.
Yeah, shouldn't let it happen in the first place.
Yeah.
And it's always fascinating me, too, because you know that us, all the major governments in the world, the United States, the Russians, the Chinese, the British, those four especially, have some type of, I don't know, I guess you call it contact with these entities. And they ought to know better than to start this dumb bullshit.
Right.
You know, to start dumb bullshit like that. Because like I say, if they wanted to, they could just put the fucking clamps on it.
Right.
Put the clamps on us and not let us, you know, do stupid shit like that.
No, they
haven't done it completely yet.
I'm sure there's some sort of treaty. We got all sorts of treaties. You don't fuck with us, we won't fuck with you.
Somebody better start doing something out there, because it's getting a little bit out of hand.
Getting a little out of hand.
With these fucking Russians and Chinese, you know, starting up shit.
It's getting a little weird out there. Those couple big superpowers are talking about joining forces. That's never good.
Yeah.
That's not good.
And it's all going to become, you know, for naught, too. You know, if it happens, it's just... So what happens when you let autocracies, you know, take power?
Yeah. We just need to bring Bill Clinton back. Let's bring it back to Clinton. Let's tie this up in a nice bow. Bring Bill Clinton back. He was 8 years of hardly any nuclear activity. 8 years of peace, a surplus, a couple blowjobs, you know.
Everybody liked Bill.
Well, I mean, things were, the world was, it was pretty damn peaceful when America wasn't, you know. There's a whole time lapse of, like, nuclear activity since the invention of whatever, of nuclear weapons. And there's this really cool time lapse where it just looks like fireworks going off over the years. And the years are ticking by off fast. And it's just going off. Bombs are going off. Nuclear activity every fucking year. Bombs, 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 bombs. Blah, blah, blah. Going off. Like, the whole map, the whole world's lighting up. And then the 8 years Clinton was president, only a few went off. Like, in the whole world. Like, the whole world was peaceful when Clinton was fucking president. It was so crazy to watch.
Yeah.
Like, for some reason, like, nuclear activity just, like, almost came to a complete stop. Like, what did he fucking do?
Oh, he negotiated a lot of arms stuff.
My God. As soon as he was out of office, it fucking picked right back up.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, I wish we had somebody like that nowadays.
Well, He just likes blowjobs too
Joe
much.
Joe could do it.
If he
Joe could do it if people would just listen to him.
Yeah.
Joe Biden.
He's got his heart in the right place. People just aren't listening to him because he can't talk anymore.
Yeah.
He's having a hard, and I mean, can you blame the dude? He's like 87 years old or something. Poor guy.
He's turned 80, I think.
That's what I said, 87, whatever. 80, 87. Anyway.
No, he's 80.
Before we get off too far off, let's get out of here.
Hey.
Let's get out of here. It was fun.
Yeah, I'm getting cauliflower ear again.
Yeah, because you're on the landline. You got to hold that up to your ear this whole time. Right. All right. Well, thanks.
All right. Well, it was interesting again. Hope it goes over good for you.
Yeah, me too. Hopefully. I'll let you know how it goes. And we'll talk soon. Like I said, I'll dredge up some more stories and we'll get some stuff going.
Okay, then.
All right, man. Have a good night. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. We'll see you then.
All right.
You too.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. There it is. There it was. Good conversation with the old man. Glad he was here with me. He's always there for me, man. I just call him up, say, hey, you want to do the show in a few days? He's like, sure. Why not? Why the fuck not? What else am I doing? He's retired now. I could probably do this show with the old man as my co-host and be more consistent. I could probably do it every week, me and him talking about shit. What else is he doing? I guess it's more about what I'm doing. But yeah, man, I'm glad he's always there for me. He's always stepping up. So that was a fun conversation. What do you think? What do you think about Clifford Stone and his whole fucking wacky ass experience in life? Is he full of shit? I don't know. I always give people the benefit of the doubt. Like I said, I'm going to post some links. You'll see, watch interviews with him. He seems very genuine to me, so it's hard to think that he at least doesn't believe his own stories. You know what I mean? Like, whether they're true or not, he believes them, and he's definitely telling them like he's telling any other fucking story in life. He's telling them very matter-of-factly. So, intriguing. An intriguing person. Rest in peace, Clifford Stone. I don't know enough about you, obviously. But hope you enjoyed that. Glad to be back. Glad you're here with me. Please send some feedback. Let's start a dialogue. This is, my 72nd episode? Technically like my 74th episode? Maybe 75th? Let's talk to each other. Write me, lostrhetoricpodcast@gmail.com. Find me on Instagram, Lost Rhetoric Podcast. Send me a message, comment on whatever. I'm going to post some shit. I'm going to promote this episode. Comment on that shit. Share that. Share everything. Share lostrhetoric.com. Just tell your friends about it. It's the best way to spread the word. Get people to notice, and leave a review. If you listen on Apple Podcast, I believe it's still true. If you leave a review on Apple Podcast, it helps. And if you leave a rating, it helps with the visibility of the show. You leave a rating, you leave a review, it gets into people's algorithms more, it gets suggested more. So the more that you pump the show up, the more people might actually find it. So I would greatly appreciate you leaving a rating, leaving a review wherever you can, on whatever platform you listen on. If you can do that, do it, please. That would be absolutely wonderful. And I'm going to keep trying, like I said, to be more consistent, but man, oh man, it certainly is hard. I just know I enjoy my time while I do it. So I hope you enjoy listening. Now, that's it. I'm not making any promises. I don't know when the next episode's going to be, but I'm going to be working on it. Trust me, I'm always thinking about it. And yeah, man, that is it for this episode. Thank you so much for being here with me. And that's it. I will see you next time. And until then, please, everyone, stay sane. And stay safe.